Chapter 7 The Power of Positive Thoughts. One sunny Saturday, the Youth Health Club planned a trip across the bay to Dr. Sen's home to work out and learn some new stunts on the tumbling equipment. They gathered at the Harrison store and walked together toward the dock to ride the motor launch. "I'll tell you all something," J.L. Canterbury told the group. "If we watch the incoming tide carefully, we can walk across the bayou to the channel, then wade and swim the deepest part. We don't need to hire the launch in nice weather like this."
"Just think how much money we would save," someone else exclaimed.
"How many want to take a dare?" another said. A chorus of voices answered, and laughing and joking, they turned towards the bayou. At first it was easy to cross the wet sands toward the far shore, and none of them was afraid of a long walk. Club hikes were usually much longer than this one would be. Some of the boys raced each other and soon outdistanced the others. The girls dawdled along behind, spending more time joking than walking. Esther noticed that the tide was beginning to turn now. "We'd better get a move on if we want to beat that tide," another girl echoed her thoughts. They had not yet reached the deepest part of the bayou. Quickly the girls and a couple of boys who were more interested in them than in hiking waded into the shallow water, hurrying along as fast as they could toward the narrowest part of the channel. The water rushed in much more quickly than they had imagined that it could. Soon they found themselves floundering in waist-deep current, then suddenly in deep water that forced them to swim.
"I'm getting tired," one girl near Esther gasped.
"Don't be afraid," Esther called to her. "Just relax and keep it up." Esther moved close enough to her friend so that she could reach out to her if the girl got into trouble.
"I can't swim any longer. I'm too tired."
"You can't give up," Esther said, encircling her with one arm. Immediately she realized it was the wrong thing to do. The girl desperately clung to her until Esther feared she would sink herself. Then she knew what she must do. She would will something to happen. She would will the girl to let go. Then she would will someone else to help them. Resolutely she focused her mind on solving the problem. "Let go, let go," the thoughts seemed to penetrate the girl's terror, and her arms relaxed around Esther's neck. "There," Esther calmed her. "Let me tow you along."
"But I'm heavier than you are," the girl objected.
"Never mind. Now we need help," Esther thought. "Someone must come to help us. Someone must come to help us." The thoughts echoed and re-echoed through her mind as she swam as strongly as she could. "Someone must help us. Someone come." Just then a stronger swimmer saw their dilemma and headed toward them. Esther willed them to reach shallow water. She concentrated with all her strength on making it, and they did. Soon she felt a bit of a sandbar. Even though the water was rising rapidly, they rested a moment before striking out again. It seemed hours before the bedraggled group staggered onto the beach and stretched out on the sand.
"Some idea," one of the boys commented at last.
"But we made it," Esther laughed, jumping up. "Come on, let's go on up for our workout." J.L. and the other boys were already there, swinging on the high bars.
"What took you so long?" they called out. With Mr. Harrison's help, Dr. Sen found office space in a building owned by Lawyer Phillips in St. Andrews. It relieved Esther to have him near enough that she could stop by to work afternoons after school.
or sometimes just to visit. The youth of the neighborhood were especially happy to have a center for wholesome activities nearby, and they used the doctor's equipment daily. Dr. Send began nutrition classes for young people and welcomed older adults as well, if they were interested in improving their health by changing their eating habits. On her afternoons of work, Esther often noticed that the doctor always took a patient's head in his hands and murmured something while he seemed to be considering the case. Then he told her that he did it to summon greater powers to focus on the ailing person. "If they understand my teachings, I talk to them about using positive thinking to cure them. If they do not, I simply employ my own connection with supernatural strength to help them," he said. To Esther, the whole idea seemed to be prayer, but she had learned not to express such thoughts to the doctor. He had used his power to heal her, and now she was to trust him, even if she didn't really understand everything he did. The more time she spent at the clinic, the more she observed influential people coming to Send for counseling and healing. She thrilled to think that she was a part of the exciting drama. Pastors of large churches in Panama City and from cities far away frequently visited him. Men from seminaries consulted the doctor for some ailment and stayed to discuss theology. And always he adapted his message to make it acceptable to the individual. He taught the gospel of man's inner goodness and of the eventual salvation of the whole race through human achievements in science and social reform. While the doctor treated many poor people for nothing, he had a large number of wealthy patients who paid him well for his services. And whenever he found an opportunity, he planted the seed of his doctrines in their minds. Esther wondered whether her friends' parents guessed all that their teenagers were learning when they came to the clinic for physical fitness classes. Nearly everyone in St. Andrews went to a Bible-oriented church and took their religion seriously. One day, Esther came up the walk to the clinic, humming softly, feeling a little dreamy and pleased with herself over the composition she had gotten back from her teacher that afternoon. Entering the waiting room, she heard Dr. Sen's voice in a treatment room. Another voice, that of a man, rose and fell in conversation with him. "I wonder who it is," she murmured to herself. Stepping closer to the door, she peeped through the keyhole. She recognized the man as the electrician who had put in some new wiring in the building. He was seated in the examining chair, and Dr. Send held his head in his hands. The man's eyes did not look natural to Esther, and when he spoke again, his voice was strange. "You must understand," Send told him, "that whiskey and rum are destroying you, both mentally and physically. I want you to leave them alone. If you drink again, you will become violently ill. Repeated drinking will be fatal to you." Esther turned away with a shiver. Sen's last statement seemed to hold an ominous threat. "I used the tool of hypnosis to reach the depths of the man's inner self," he commented, when the patient left. "At times a habit will so weaken the conscious mind that it cannot respond to reason. Then hypnosis can be helpful." "How does it work?" she asked. The doctor waved his hand and shrugged. "You're not ready to deal with this process now, my child. I will explain it to you when you're ready. But let me warn you, never allow anyone else to hypnotize you. You have a superior level of existence, and should you submit to the powers of another, you would lose much of what you have spiritually and mentally." "Then is hypnosis bad?"
His sudden shift in attitude towards hypnotism puzzled her. "It can be," was all he would say. Abruptly, he went into his private room and closed the door behind him. Esther was in the 10th grade now. The principal was as unpopular as Mr. Stanfill had been the year before, and the woman teacher was not as easy to get along with as Miss Bullock. One day, when the principal whipped one of the 10th grade girls, all 12 girls in the class took off at noon for the bayou to eat their lunches and gripe together about the female teacher, whom they blamed for all their troubles. "Let's play hooky all afternoon," someone suggested. All the girls giggled at the idea. "It would serve the woman right. The principal can't possibly whip all of us," one of them said. "I wouldn't count on that," Esther warned soberly. "He might just do it to show us who's boss." "Well, I don't have to go to school anyway," another girl shouted angrily. Several agreed with her. "I don't care how mean the teachers or the principal get. I'm not dropping out," Esther asserted. "I'm going to finish high school and get my diploma in spite of all of them." "And she's going to finish college when she gets done with high school," Iris put in. "Don't you plan to get married?" asked a friend, shocked. Esther's cousin Ruby quickly answered, "Don't listen to her. The way he's making eyes at her, she'll marry J.L. next year. She won't go to college." "Well, I will, too," Esther snapped, forgetting that she had almost decided not to attend. "Esther's going to take on the whole faculty by herself," another friend laughed. The girls had finished their lunches now and began to glance nervously towards the school. "We're late," someone ventured. "He'll whip us anyway," Ruby said. "We might as well all play hooky." They sat on the bank trying to make up their minds when a noise in the bushes near the water attracted their attention. The bushes parted and the snout of an alligator pushed through the tangle. Esther froze as the huge beast lumbered toward them. "Come on!" the girls yelled as they raced over the little hill of sand that hid them from the school grounds. Still Esther did not move. Her legs seemed to have turned to stone. Her heart raced, but her paralyzed feet kept her motionless. She tried to scream for someone to help her, but not a word came out. Then Ruby glanced back. In an instant she reached her cousin's side. "Come on," she screamed, grabbing her by the arm. Esther clung to the other girl's dress while Ruby dragged her along. She was sure the alligator had almost caught them, ready to drag them back to his bayou lair. "For pity's sakes, Esther, stand up and walk," Ruby chided. "He's just standing back there watching us now." When she realized that the alligator was not going to get her, Esther went limp. Then with trembling knees she walked back to the classroom with Ruby and slipped into her desk. They were not nearly as late as they had thought they were, and the teacher chose to ignore their tardiness. After school her friends all laughed at her unmercifully. Esther may be bold enough to take on the principal, but she loses her nerve pretty quick when she sees an alligator, Ruby giggled. More than a little embarrassed, Esther slipped off and walked home alone that day. "I guess I have a lot to learn about being brave," she admitted to herself. "I thought I had risen above being afraid of ordinary things, but here I am a coward when even a little threat arises." She made up her mind to assert her mental powers each day. Dr. Send would have been terribly disappointed in her if he had seen how she had behaved at noon.